I think almost everybody would say at some point, I wish I could slow down. Like, things are going so fast. But what I have found is trying to just put on awe as kind of prescription glasses. It's not that it's an extra thing I'm doing. It's just maybe I can see the world a little more clearly because I'm looking up a little bit more.
Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life. Hey, it's Lisa. I've been feeling pretty nostalgic, slash sentimental, slash weepy lately. Is this because my youngest is starting her senior year and I find myself flipping through scrapbooks and scrapbooks on repeat because I am not okay with my kids all being grown up? Okay, sure, maybe. All this nostalgia has reminded me of a moment when my oldest baby was about 18 months, just a toddler, and I was busy bringing in some groceries from the car, and I was in a hurry to get into our apartment. I had all these things in my arms. I was trying to usher him along when there was a sudden gust of wind. I saw him just ahead of me, and it turned him around. It almost overtook his little body, but not quite. He looked at me wide-eyed and smiling as if to say, "Did you see that? What was that?" He was thrilled and it caused him to laugh a little bit. And I get emotional just thinking about that because in that moment I realized, oh, he's never experienced this before. He doesn't know what's happening. It was kind of a sacred experience to witness my little boy feeling wind and wonder and awe for the first time. Well, that's what today is all about, awe-seeking. This is actually a special edition, you could say, of The Lisa Show, because I'm teaming up with another podcast host. This is Marcus Smith, my friend and colleague at BYU Radio, who hosts Constant Wonder.
Hi, it's me, Marcus. Hi.
Marcus and I share offices next to each other. And listen, I have a loud voice. I know you've heard many phone calls, private conversations, and you haven't said a word. You've kept my confidence. And so I feel like you are totally justified in asking any question of me. I will answer honestly. I think you've earned the right. Thank you for keeping my secrets.
Yeah, I know a cover-up when I hear one. I
know. Also, what have you heard?
Nothing, not a thing.
Nothing? Okay, cool.
Or, it's all
see, we're friends.
Yep.
So here's what's up. This episode is a joint venture, if you will, between our two podcasts. And we're working in tandem today because of a guest who has great stories of great interest to your audience, Marcus, as well as mine. Deborah Farmer Chris, who's going to join us in just a few moments.
Deborah Farmer Chris is a child development expert, a parent educator. She is equipped with all kinds of wisdom and experience, great stories, gleanings from scientific research about helping children to tap into the human quest for awe and wonder, which is really universal.
Deborah's new book is titled Raising Awe Seekers: How the Science of Wonder Helps Our Kids Thrive.
Deborah, welcome so much. It's just great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
I thought I would do an icebreaker along these lines. I'm a hiker, and my hiking buddy and I came down off the Wasatch Mountain Range here in the Rocky Mountains of Utah, and we'd been a long day up in the mountains. And we thought we would stop. It was my hiking buddy's idea. We would stop and visit with, well, it was his uncle-in-law-to-be, but we stopped and he was a botanist. And we were talking about what we had seen. And I hadn't been aware of the evening primrose. It was brand new to me. And this botanist says, well, come out, come off the porch, and I'll show you where it's growing in my yard. It's not only that, but it's 5 o'clock, the sun's going down. Just hang on, you're going to see this thing open. Well, what I wasn't prepared for was that from the bud to the fully open flower is just a matter of a few seconds. And to that day, I thank Jim Farmer for showing me this whole thing. Yeah, that was because my hiking buddy is connected to Gladys and Jim and your family. And so when I heard about your book, I thought, this is a must do.
Way to make me cry before I start talking.
I love your reaction and your gasp of pure excitement in this connection.
Because when you were talking about this, I thought this is a story my dad would love. Because, you know... Like in so many ways, my book, which we'll talk about later, is really a love letter to my dad who passed away before my kids were born. And he was and remains the most curious person I've ever met. Just childlike wonder and delight in everything. I can't look up at the nice guy without thinking about my dad. Here's something you need to know about him, though. This is not a man who was comfortable in a party. He was a scientist. He felt much more at home in a lab than he did, you know, in anything larger than four people. And so he was not the most talkative person, but he was very experiential. And so he showed his love so often by showing us what he loved. And so I have this memory of there were five of us, I'm the youngest of five, and him shaking me awake at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I stumble outside and he had like laid out blankets and sleeping bags. I think three of us arrived. I have a couple siblings that I'm sure were not there. They don't get up in the middle of the night. And I think we're all grumbling, like, why are we out here? And he's just, look. And it was the Perseid meteor shower in August. And it was just going through the night sky. My body woke up fully because of what I was seeing, and I was watching it. Just recently, we were at the beach, and it was nighttime, and you could see the Milky Way. And I called the kids out. I was like, just look up. And every time I say to my kids, look up, like, I just feel my dad next to me. Because, like, that was a core memory of being outside and looking up and seeing something bigger than myself. When the world is so kind of overwhelming in the news, I just feel like sometimes just reminding that we're small is actually a really healthy feeling to just, you know, remind myself that there's a smallness. And one of my siblings just really struggled in adolescence with mental health and other things. And my dad, again, wouldn't be the one to say, let's talk about your feelings. But he would take me and my brother hiking in Southern Utah, like any chance he got. He would just drop everything. And we'd go out to these canyons and these expanses. My dad was like, let's get you out. Let's get you into nature. And, you know, let's get you out of whatever funk you're in. And there was something about being able to see so far that I think created that connection and sense of perspective for my brother that he even now credits as getting him through that tough time.
Well, you know, there's hardly anybody I've ever met who doesn't know the expression childlike wonder. It's such a cliche, in fact. And when I think about that and try to kind of parse that and try to tease out what that childlike wonder is all about, and you tell your story about your dad, he wasn't being preachy to you at all. And he had it maybe before you had it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's this like symbiotic back and forth that I experienced with my dad of I would watch him be fascinated by things. And those things included Greek translations of the Bible and Shakespeare plays and flowers and lichen and trilobites and meteors. And it was just, there was this kind of childlike wonder and this fascination. And I am certain that that affected me. But flipping it the other direction, when I started to become interested in things that he didn't know about, like he made my interests his interests. Even now with my own kids, it's like, oh, like you're super into blank now. And I mean, I know every Celtic stat. I did not know that before my son got really into it, because it's just this sense of when you make their interests your interests, it just opens up this really fun world.
Lisa, how does this land with you? And when you think about your own childhood?
You're describing someone very similar to my mother, who was also a school teacher, an artist. And whenever we would show any interest in anything, you know, we went to the library, we went to all the museums, we went to the botanical gardens, and she just was so excited to show us things. I love what you're talking about, of this wonder that feeds each other. Mm-hmm. It's interesting now that my mother is still like that. You know, she's like that as a grandmother. When all of her grandchildren were quite young, she would have these art days to come over. Let me show you these art techniques. Let's play with different materials. What are you interested in? Let's draw that. Let's paint that. And it's funny because now her grandchildren are older. They're in their early 20s, most of them. And they still request these art days because it's this chance to explore. And so I love what you're talking about how it being a collaborative effort, because I think that's on the top of everyone's mind too, of like, how is this introduced to me and how do I perpetuate that? And how is this part of my life? But that curiosity, it does feed off of relationships.
Yeah.
This leads into many stories that Deborah has about odd journaling. You had access, I understand, to what your grandmother had written about.
My grandma kept one of those like 5-year diaries where you do a line a day. And so literally it was one or two sentences a day that she would write down, and it started in the 30s before she got married and was a nurse and instructor.
Wow.
And then she married a rancher in tiny town, Idaho, like 500 people, inherited 2 children. He was a widower, had 5 more of her own, and every day wrote this. I've read the whole thing a couple of times. I'm transfixed by it. Sometimes I'll just go to whatever day it is, like October 3rd, and read her October 3rds for 50 years and just see, you know, moments where she was basically the town midwife because there was nobody with training in the town, right? So some days it was just how many bottles of peaches that she had bottled. Some days it who was sick. And I love this. Every single year she recorded the first time the robin came.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, you look for signs of spring too, just like me. I have a fraught relationship with winter. I live in New England. And I thought that just connected me with her. And it also made me realize that my mom, who's also a writer, does tremendous journaling, like pages and pages. And even though I write, I'd kind of fallen out of the habit of journaling.
Yeah.
And so kind of inspired by my grandmother's, I do 2 or 3 sentences a day. And it's so doable. Often I'll just share them on one of my social medias. Like sometimes it's a picture I take and I just do a caption. Mm-hmm. But now this year I've been doing one thing every day, like 365 days of wonder. And I can look back in February and be like, oh, I'm so glad I wrote that down. I'll share one of them because I was having a rough February day. It was very cold here. My son had the flu. He was out of school for 2 weeks. It was a really nasty flu. It was a Monday. And so I'm driving to pick up my etiquette from school. And I'm like, I haven't found anything awe-inducing or wonder today. So I'm actually thinking, all right, maybe I'll see something while I drive. But I was skeptical.
Yeah.
Really skeptical.
We'll see.
We'll see. And then the next thing I know, like I'm behind a school bus, which is going to make 100 stops, right? So I know I'm going to be late. And I'm grumbling and the bus stops and this kid comes down. He's wearing a hoodie. It's like 12 degrees and he's wearing a hoodie, right? Comes down the steps. And this huge dog has been sitting at the top of the driveway. And the moment he comes down from the steps, this dog comes barreling down the driveway and jumps into his arms. And you can just see this kid's face light up. And my eyes filled with tears. And I thought, like, there it is. There's that 15 seconds. It doesn't mean that my kid is better. It doesn't mean that my work is easier. But it means that in those 15 seconds, and I'm getting goosebumps just remembering it, I tuned into something else, right? It's the and, right? The world is difficult and it's beautiful. It's messy and it's wonderful. And I think holding those together, that's what awe does for me. That's what wonder does for me. It allows me to hold both at the same time and not minimize one or the other. It's that there can always be a beautiful sunset, even on the hardest day.
Oh, that's so beautifully said.
I love the idea of odd journaling. Some people have like 5 different journals. What do you do, Deborah? Do you have one dedicated to these moments of awe?
Yeah, I do it on computer. I type. And so I literally have like day 165, day 166. Some days it's a sentence, some days it's a picture, some days it's a short story. I do have tons of little journals. I'm kind of compulsive about buying them. So sometimes I'll draw it in a journal, but then I'll transcribe it over to a document because I know the cloud will last longer in some ways. I will lose my journals.
Right.
But I also find that I share them with people. Like I will send it to my mom. I'll send it to a friend. I often will send it to my 14-year-old, right?
Smart.
And that has been a really fun way to connect with my teenager.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like, oh my gosh, this is a cool picture I took, or this story, right? It's short. It's not preachy because it's just sharing. And then very frequently, because we do this, she'll share stuff back. Like she'll share a picture that she found that was cool. And so that gives me a window a little bit into what's bringing her wonder. So I don't have to sit down and say, mother's wonder moment of today is, right? When no teenager wants to hear that. But I almost feel like when you share it, it's amplified. I have one of my dearest friends from high school. whose young daughter had leukemia for a second time. And she lives in Wisconsin and I live in Boston. And so I just felt super helpless. And so I finally said, I'm going to send you one beautiful thing a day and you don't need to respond, right? I'm going to share something beautiful
every
day.
What a gift.
And that's what I do. And sometimes she'd respond, sometimes she'd heart, sometimes it'd be nothing. But it was this way of just being a constant, because sometimes you don't know what to say when somebody's going through something difficult. And I just wanted to be on the lookout. And it also got me thinking about her. So every day I was thinking, what am I going to send to her today? And that also opened me up to look for things. And that's why I call the book Raising Awe Seekers, because you can't force a child or yourself to feel anything.
No, you can't.
You just can't.
But I've tried.
I know. But you can put us in the pathway to provide opportunities if we know where awe is found. Maybe no, maybe yes, but it might happen.
I think this is the very arena in which someone like Lisa, with her Council of Moms and her show, specializes in pulling us into those pathways, those opportunities. You never talk about parenting very much, do you, Lisa?
Yeah, never. I don't swim in it. Yeah. And especially, I'm not very reflective of it now that my children are mostly grown.
Yeah.
And examine all of my decisions.
Everything.
And relationships, like over and over and over again. Yeah. As my youngest is entering her senior year. Yes, Marcus, never.
No. Oh my goodness, that is a milestone.
Right?
I'm a dad, but I don't have a little podcast, Council of Dads. But the thing about Deborah's work is, I think, so crucial for parents to get their minds and hearts wrapped around.
100%. And I feel like as a mom, a lot of the times I was very, and I still feel this way, very protective of childhood. Mm-hmm. I feel like we live in a society that values just sort of the superficial elements of childhood, the fun and the nonstop and the lack of responsibility. And we oftentimes forget about that curiosity and wonder and shared experiences of childhood that lays a foundation for what kind of adult they think is possible to be.
Yeah. For me, when I look at what matters most, I want my kids to be kind. And I do want them to find kind of joy and beauty in this world. I want them to fall in love with this world, the people, the beauty. There's so much here. And I feel like it's not much of a life if we're just drudging through it. And so that doesn't mean they're not going to face all the difficult times we all do. I think that Mary Oliver poem, what are you going to do with your one wild and precious life?
Right.
And I think it is the idea of a precious life. Like, this is a really precious world. The people around us are precious people. And this is the thing about wonder, is it doesn't have to be the Grand Canyon. Like, just as often, it's that really beautiful flower you didn't notice was blooming. It's the neighbor who, when you're sick, brought in your trash barrels for you. And those are the things that ground us back in what's real.
Yes.
And as we're more and more online, awe just grounds us back to our senses, grounds us back to what matters most. I've really spent the last 3 years steeped in this. And again, I feel like I have a lifetime of experiences. But in practicing it and writing about it and talking to people, everyone wants to share their awe stories, which is
Isn't that so true?
Like, I'll have my neighbor stop me, right? And he was upset about something in the news. And he said, I was so disheartened. And then I drove home and I saw this flock of geese go overhead. Those geese don't know what's happening in the world. And they're flying straight and they're off to do their thing. And so I get these stories now, but it cumulatively has shown me that I'm tapping into something that matters for me and my kids and that seems to be resonating more broadly. And I could not be more thrilled.
I love that you're a proponent for this. And I think a lot of parents can relate to that feeling of there's so much of the busyness of being a parent. And it's easy to get caught up in, I need to teach them this, and we got to go to school and soccer practice. And they're like the logistics of it, because of the nature of day in, day out, and the constant demands of it, it's easy to lose sight of that.
I try to think of one wild and precious childhood, right? You can't make everything magical. Like, there's routine and there's homework and there's
everything else.
No,
and there's a lot of pressure for that. You only have 18 summers.
God.
You have to go to Disneyland every summer.
Yeah.
I'd love to know your perspective on that.
I'm not into, like, you have to pack it with these amazing experiences all the time. In fact, one of the professors I talked to, one of the pieces of advice he gave me was, if you do take a family trip, don't overprogram it. Wander in a neighborhood you've never wandered before. We went to California for the very first time a year ago, and I didn't take his advice. I planned it. I was like, we're going to have magic. We're going to do all these things. So we got to this aquarium, and it was packed, and I have one child who just does not do crowds well. And so we left, and we just started wandering. And suddenly we take a turn, and there's a beach. This is in San Diego, and there are sea lions everywhere. And we just spent 2 hours with the kids naming the sea lions, stories about the sea lions, taking pictures of the sea lions. Did we do a day at Disneyland? We did. That is not what they remember the most, right? I think that's really important as parents to remember. If I think about what brings me awe and wonder, reading to my kids at night, a car ride where we roll down the windows and we're playing music and having fun in that way. My 14-year-old, she likes to make bucket lists for summer. And they're not big things. One of them was, I want to cut a watermelon in half and eat it like a bowl. That was an item on her list. I was like, I can make that happen.
I can make that happen.
And I love how small it was, right? And so we opened it. We sat on the deck and one child had one half, one child had the other half, and they scooped it out. And I thought, we put pressure on ourselves as parents to make things magical when we forget that sometimes the magical evening is the watermelon that you're eating out of a bowl, or it's just looking up at the stars.
This is a world that loves sensation. Mm-hmm. This is a world that loves epic drama. Everything's over the top. Mm-hmm. And listen,
I'm all here for drama. But I like your
The and is important. There's a kind of a paradox I see here, and it has to do with the fact that maybe one of the things most central to our lives might be found in the small, negligible, overlooked opportunities of seeing the leaf blow down the street.
But we live in a very go-go-go world, and we live in a very screens-oriented world, and slowing down is tough, right? People are very busy.
Yeah.
And so I give no really prescriptive parenting advice. I think there are thousands of ways to be a great parent. And I think your kids came to you for a reason. So, if you are loud, you are loud. If you're quiet, you are quiet. And you don't have to be something you're not, right? And they're going to stretch you and you're going to grow together. My best piece of advice is that they watch us.
Yes.
They're great anthropologists of human behavior, and we are their case study. They're looking at us.
Oh, true.
And they're noticing, right? And I am okay with my kids thinking I'm goofy. I'm okay with them being like, okay, mom's pulling us out to see a sunset again. And there was this...
Isn't that the sweetest, though?
Because there was this moment I was driving my daughter and her friend to an art class. And it was springtime in Boston, just beautiful. And so I kept pointing out magnolia trees that were blooming. And my daughter turned to her friend and said, my mom really gets excited about trees and birds. But she had no embarrassment in her voice.
Yeah.
I love that you actually can share that with a friend. And it doesn't mean that she's going to be super into birds, but I think that sometimes we want to do so much for our kids and support them, we almost forget to support our own interests. And, I picked up boxing this year, and my kids make fun of me, but there are boxing gloves in the car, and I go to my boxing classes, and I love it. And they know that mom is doing something for her. That brings her joy. And that's important. Part of it is feeding yourself. What makes you light up? Because if you're not lighting up yourself, it's really hard to be there for your kids and their needs.
Oh, I love that you brought that up. I feel very passionately about that. It's interesting as you were talking about that your kids know what you like. My mother, she'll kill me for saying this. Don't tell her I told you. She will cry when she talks about how much her mother loved a sunset. Mm. And that every time she sees a beautiful sunset, she thinks of her mother. And to me, there's something so beautiful and pure and truthful about that. And you're absolutely right. You are showing your kids who you are and how you want to be remembered in what you choose, what you talk about, what you think about, what you draw attention to. And I've got my nerdy things and my kids know it. I take pictures of trees all the time. I'm like, look at this tree. And they're like, okay, settle down. Or I love doing improvisation, which is just like goofy games. I know it's nerdy, but my kids know that it is exciting for me.
Yeah.
And there's so many different ways to be a good mom, mm-hmm. to be a good person in society. And this idea of just liking what everybody else likes because it's all over social media. We are all kind of looking the same and dressing the same. And kicking against that is actually an invitation to finding your creative pursuit, what fills you up. It's interesting to see the joy that I feel in watching my kids light up.
I really do feel like watching my kids find what makes them tick.
Yes.
And then find a new thing. Like that to me is one of the most exciting things of like, oh my gosh, my kids are cool people. And what makes them cool is not their grades and it's not what college they go to. It's all these other things that make them tick. And you know, for anybody out there who's like the mom of a middle schooler, it's very easy to get scared because they're changing their personality and their style and their interests and their friends 16 times between sixth and eighth grade. And then I hear from the parents, like, what happened to my little girl? Like,
why are they experimenting with eyeliner so
much? Exactly. And why this and why that? And if it can just be like, I'm curious. Who are you
today? I'm trying things out.
Right?
Like, it's like you're living my exact life. I relate to everything that you just said. I feel like we're looking for a way to connect. And this idea of connecting with these awe-inspiring moments, because it's not just led by us, but it's this shared collaborative experience of showing what brings you awe and wonder. And it's such a vulnerable exchange, but it really strengthens that relationship in a way that few other things really can.
Yeah. And I think there's also that if you're feeling depleted, you're listening out there and you're like, I'm not tapping into this at all.
Yeah. That's, I don't know how to do this.
This is where you just start small and say, what is a song or a movie where I know I'm going to have that feeling? Just tapping in.
Sometimes I think, especially as parents, we unintentionally put a list and a heaviness to us as parents of we need to do all these things. Give me the hack. Then give me, okay, so then how do I, okay, so awe is important too. Okay, so now how do I do this? And it creates this kind of frenzy in us as parents. And then you get caught up in what society teaches you of what a good life is. There's kind of this disconnect. It's almost like you need to recommit yourself to a different way of living. It's not a hack.
No.
It's not a novel idea, this idea of living with awe and wonder. It's a change in how you do it. So kind of a big question, but this idea of awe as a mode of existence versus just this thing to do or to add. What is your final perspective on why this is so essential to living a good life?
I think almost everybody would say at some point, I wish I could slow down. Like things are going so fast. But what I have found is trying to just put on awe as kind of prescription glasses. It's not that it's an extra thing I'm doing. It's just maybe I can see the world a little more clearly because I'm looking up a little bit more. I'm pausing to listen to the bird sound or listen to what my kid is chatting about in the back seat. This is what slows it down. And I also think that when we talk about the good life and the pressure with kids, I think so often parents say, I want my kids to be happy. And happiness, like awe and anger and everything, it's an emotion and it comes and goes, right? You can have a baseline, like I'm a fairly content person or optimistic, but you're not necessarily going to feel happy all the time. You know, your kids are going to feel down. They're going to feel lonely. They're going to feel frustrated. And the thing I love about awe is that it, for me, it's almost the ultimate and, right? I am frustrated and the peeper frogs came out helding this spring. I am frustrated and somebody sent me a really nice text. When I think about what I want for my kids, I don't want them to have a life with zero struggle because they won't, number one, but I want them to know that we can all tap into this as a way to feel connected to ourselves and the world when things feel a little out of control. There are gifts everywhere. You can go outside on your worst day and you can see the kid coming off the bus and having the dog tackle them. It becomes a habit over time to put on those glasses. You can start small, but it's a way of seeing that is worth pursuing.
Deborah, thank you so much for your time
and
for being with us today.
Thank you. This was so unexpectedly wonderful.
Lots of things can be unexpectedly wonderful, but we'll miss them if we don't put on our awe-seeing glasses. And this isn't just for us adults. It's also for our kids. When we take time to journal about the surprises of our day, or point out flowering trees, or relish the gentle kindnesses of others, or stay up late to watch a meteor shower, we're not just cultivating awe in our lives, we're showing our kids how to find it in their lives too. Of all the things that Deborah said, I think my favorite was that awe is what will slow time down. Yes, please. In a world that seems to be racing out of sight, including my kids' childhoods, I'm constantly trying to find that button that will pause the screen and give me time to breathe. Deborah reminded me that I do have access to that button. We all do. I just never thought I would find it nestled beneath a robin's wing, or glowing in the colors of a sunset, or hovering in the first gust of wind that fills your little boy with delight, wonder, and awe.
The Lisa Show and Constant Wonder are productions of BYU Radio. The Lisa Show is hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Erica Price and Becca Hurley-Lung, with help from Blake Morse and Kenny Mears, with post-production by Gracie Davis. Constant Wonder is hosted by Marcus Smith. This episode was produced by Jess Scoble. A link to Constant Wonder will be in the show notes. Don't miss out on two other great podcasts from the Lisa Show family, The Council of Moms and Proofread, a new book review podcast to help you read more of what you love. You can find The Council of Moms and Proofread on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for your messages. We read them all. And thanks for listening.
Do you find yourself avoiding the news because of how depressive and divisive it all seems, but still want to stay informed? You are not alone. Top of Mind, a BYU Radio original podcast, understands how polarizing these conversations can be and wants to help you engage in the challenge while seeking understanding. With the goal of developing empathy for others, Top of Mind helps you clarify your own views, become an effective advocate for the things that you care about, and challenges your way of thinking so you can become a better citizen and a kinder neighbor. Listen to Top of Mind now on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.